From the studios of KPCW in Park City, it's This Green Earth, a weekly talk show about environmental issues and sustainability. I'm Nell Larson.
And I'm Chris Cherniak. Last week, we spoke with Bernice Notenbaum, host of the new show on the Weather Channel called Tipping Points. The show highlights those ongoing events occurring in our atmosphere that may reach a point where permanent change to our planet's climate, oceans, and biosphere may occur.
Continuing on this topic, we'll be speaking with Dr. Jeff Masters. He's the co-founder and director of meteorology for the website Weather Underground, one of the most popular and comprehensive internet sites on weather and climate, and one of our favorites.
That's right. And we'll get Jeff's take on the IPCC Fifth Assessment Report, as well as his thoughts on this year's Atlantic and Pacific hurricane seasons, and his experiences flying through hurricanes. You don't want to miss that.
So that's in the second half of the show. But in the first part, Chris and I will cover a number of environmental items in the news this week, including a power plant closing in Utah, a coal power plant closing in Utah, the governor's clean air action team that has just been formed, IKEA starting to sell solar panels in their stores, and the LA Times' new stance on letters to the editor about climate change. If time, we'll also talk about a new compressed natural gas station here in Park City coming online.
Really? Oh, perfect. Yeah. Hope we get to that. Of course, you can join in on today's discussions by posting your questions or comments to our Facebook page, KPCW This Green Earth.
The environment and our connections to it. That's This Green Earth, and it all gets started right after these words from our underwriters. Stay tuned.
Each week, KPCW produces five public affairs programs. Join us at 9 a.m. weekdays for Mountain Money, This Green Earth, The Mountain Life, Cool Science Radio, and Fun Friday, sponsored in part by Prudential Utah Real Estate and San Francisco Design.
Are you a treasure hunter? Do you like to upscale and find creative ways to reuse materials? Volunteering at the Park City Restore gives you the first look at donations. Your gift of time means more affordable housing services are available through Habitat for Humanity, and you get first peek at the daily stream of Restore donations. Learn how you can get involved at habitat-utah.org. Click on the big yellow volunteer button. Habitat for Humanity of Summit and Wasatch Counties is a nonprofit organization.
Hi, this is Carla Lehigh, designer at Elliott Workgroup and longtime KPCW listener. Our design team offers complete architectural, interior, planning, and sustainable design services for historic, commercial, hospitality, affordable housing, and sports projects throughout Park City and the Mountain West. ElliottWorkgroup.com.
Welcome back to This Green Earth, a weekly talk show on environmental issues, news items, and concepts of sustainability.
Right? All of the above.
All of the above.
Plus a little bit more.
And more, of course. I'm Chris Cherniak. She's Nell Larson. And we were saying in the intro, Dr. Jeff Masters is going to be joining us the second half of the show to talk about, among other things, his great website. Well, him and his co-creators, Wonderground or Weather Underground, all things about weather and climate, and we'll have a great conversation with him. But first, we want to take the first part of the show and go over a bunch of news items. Always lots of items in the news to cover: air, water, land related issues, policy, economic. We're going to hit on a number of those things here with some interesting news items. Let's start with this decision by Rocky Mountain Power to close a coal-fired power plant, the carbon power plant in Castlegate.
And this is one that I think this story is especially interesting, because I think most of us are probably familiar with this plant because we all drive by it. If you're heading down to southern Utah, if you're heading down to Moab or whatever,
right,
you drive straight by this plant. It's right at the mouth of Price Canyon, right outside of Helper. And it has a really dramatic look to it.
I always found it a strange place to put a power plant because it's within this ravine. It's tucked up against mountain canyon
rock walls.
And all of a sudden this power plant appears.
And in fact, because of its location, they have to pipe the coal to the plant on a conveyor belt that goes over the road. So look up next time you're driving through there, because the coal source is coming from the other side of, what is that, 191, I think.
Right.
Over the road to the plant, and then they store a 30-day supply right there by the plant. But it's a 72-megawatt plant. It is the state's oldest coal-burning station.
Mm-hmm.
And it
consumes about 1,800 tons of coal a day. That's what's being conveyed over the road. And because of the challenges, like you were saying, because of its where it's situated, mm-hmm. there's, among other things, there's not enough room to put in some of the emissions control systems that are required for this plant, because the regulations, EPA regulations, are going into effect most likely next year with respect to controlling mercury, not greenhouse gases. We've talked about that. It's a separate issue.
Category.
These are new standards that are being put in place by the EPA to control the emission of mercury from these mm-hmm. stacks. And this plant just doesn't have enough room to accommodate that.
Doesn't have the space. Yeah, they say it's closing because of these regulations, but really it is kind of a space issue, because Rocky Mountain Power says this transition is really gradual. They expect to be able to operate all their other coal plants to mm-hmm. the end of their regulatory lives. We're not going to see a mass closure of all of the coal-fired power plants in Utah. This one is a specific.
There are a couple plants mentioned in this article are the ones in Hunter and Huntington, both coal-fired, and both will be adapted with this new emission treatment standard, mercury emission treatment facilities. So they're going to be upgraded, and like you say, they'll continue a good long life, I guess. They're on plan, on schedule to remain to meet their lifespan. But this plant, this 172 megawatt plant in Castlegate, is going to be shut down early, a year or so early. The plan is to shut it down
early next year, so early 2014. We mentioned that these regulations are coming from the Clean Air Act and the revision of it that took place in 1990. And one thing that I think is really interesting is that scientists kind of calculate the impact that this will have on public health. And so I think that's always interesting to quantify. So they hope that the new mercury standards, and this is talking nationwide, will prevent 130,000 asthma attacks and 11,000 premature deaths each year. They say that the air quality improvements will be worth $37 billion to $90 billion in human health benefits. So there's mm-hmm. a big range. And that's from the EPA, and they said it's, because they're preventing 90% of the mercury that's in the coal from being released to the air.
And this plant being shut down is among the nation's 150 coal-burning plants whose retirements have been announced since 2010. That's a lot. More and more coal-fired plants are being closed down either because of regulatory requirements or economic issues that, in a sense, that natural gas is cheaper. And so they're being swapped out. They're being retired and replaced by natural gas. In fact, Rocky Mountain Power is doing one of those things to one of its power plants in Wyoming, the Naughton Station. It burns coal now, but they're switching over to natural gas. So you're seeing more and more power utilities doing that. And just this morning, there was an article out that talked about the fact that the CO2 emissions across the country are down for 2012. Somewhere around 3.8% reduction in CO2 emissions in this country. And they equate that not so much to the economy, because the economy has been recovering in 2012. So this isn't a reduction based on
a decrease in economic
activity. This is because of coal-fired power plants being either shut down or replaced by natural gas, and more efficient cars, who also – cars, trucks, buses, they all emit carbon dioxide too. So it's encouraging that we're seeing carbon dioxide emissions going down because of actions, either regulatory or economic or behavior.
Right. Remember, let's not leave that out.
The third leg of the stool.
What we're doing in our own homes.
Okay. So this is what Rocky Mountain Power is doing. And that was really interesting.
Yeah, really good to hear. So speaking of toxins being released to the air and air quality issues, the governor has convened a new committee.
Yes.
Chris.
Why not?
Another committee. So this committee has been tasked with?
Well, studying air quality in the state.
Just to see if it's good or bad?
Just to see
if there are any problems.
They can come up with, in addition to the already group that is out there, a committee called the Utah Air Quality Board that also studies the air quality in the state and comes up with plans and ideas to address air quality. Yes, the governor announced a new blue ribbon panel of industry, academic, and government minds. It's 38 people that are going to study air quality in the state. It's called the Clean Air Action Team. And I just kind of noted that of the 38 people, 20% of this group is are politicians, mayors, city council people, county council people, the like. So, and then a few others are industry, like I say, industry related, business, chamber of commerce representatives. So they're tasked to meet 10 times in the coming months, and by the end of 2014, present the governor with a plan of action. But the point is, there is already a group out there to address air quality issues. It's called the Utah Air Quality Board. They're tasked to do the exact same thing. And if the governor really wants to do something, let the Utah Air Quality Board act. It's kind of kicking, in a way, you can kind of see this kicking the bad air down the road.
Yeah.
And you know, we're studying it. We need more studies to figure out why we have such bad air. We know
right.
why we
when
have
the,
bad
when the people of the Wasatch Front especially could tell you firsthand
exactly.
the air is bad. Things need bad, to be done right now.
And what we can do about it. So that's something I saw in yesterday's op-ed pieces in the Salt Lake Tribune. And so we'll pay attention to what the Clean Air Action Team comes up with.
We will. We definitely will.
38 people can have to come up with something.
That's a huge committee.
Yes. Good luck. Good luck with that. So that's item number two.
Yeah. So in good news on the renewable energy front, you know, we've been talking about this dirty energy and air quality problems, and this is kind of an interesting one. IKEA has started selling solar panels. And I'm just going to read a little piece from their website. They say, "We want to inspire and enable you to live a more sustainable life at home by offering products and services that will help you to save money, waste, and energy. We are strongly committed to investing in renewable energy and energy-efficient technology to help tackle climate change." So they name climate change, right, in their statement on this. And they say, for example, "We've installed more than 250,000 solar panels on IKEA stores and buildings across the world. As part of this commitment, we've decided to make it easier for you to purchase affordable solar panels for your home." And so this product, I guess, mm-hmm. is being rolled out in the UK first. And they plan to get it at all 17 British stores within the next 10 months. And then they're going to assess that and expand it to their other stores. And the thing about this that is just that's a little bit mind blowing is that you can, you know, they call them like these flat pack pallets that they have with everything in the store.
Right.
And that is how the solar panel comes. You just can take it off the giant shelf and put it in your cart and wheel through the checkout with your new solar panel.
But it's not called, so it's called, it's given some Swedish name, right? Some,
yeah, some three syllable, unintelligible,
eight consonant, the, you know, dirge.
Yes, exactly. Yes, precisely. And,
So wait a minute. You mean I couldn't go buy solar panels before at
So any of the Lowe's other does sell Chinese them. They say this store? is not, This is not, you know, like the first big box store that you can buy it at, but it's sort of this first like lifestyle store. Like they are selling furniture and art and solar panels. So it's like the idea is, you know, a cost conscious family walks into right. IKEA. They work their way through. They're looking to buy a new bed, maybe make some improvements on their home. And then they see solar panels and think, you know, in 7 years, that'll be paid back, and then I'll get free energy. And so the 7 years is the estimate for the UK. I had to laugh when they rolled it out in the UK. I'm sure they have a reason for that. It's not the amount of sun that they get.
No.
But so they don't encourage self-installation. They actually have China's massive energy group, Hanergy Holding Group Limited, will do the installation.
What?
Yeah. So they don't want people fiddling with the electronics on their own. So it's the lowest price that people are going to pay is about £5,700 or about $9,200.
Okay.
To buy the panels and get them installed.
Okay. So, but this is starting in the UK. It's not available at the IKEA.
It's not here just yet.
Okay.
But they say they plan to expand worldwide with the panels. So. Okay. It's an interesting change.
It's encouraging.
That's
and
right.
Maybe some of the other large stores similar to that model will pick up on that idea and we'll get a little more competition.
Yeah.
Price competition.
Absolutely.
Okay. Good. All right. Item number four. Interesting one. Controversial one.
Yeah. And the funniest thing about this one is that is the way it started off. So the LA Times has taken this stance in the recent, you know, days that they – or weeks, days and weeks – that they aren't going to print letters by climate deniers that say certain things. And the way this came up was in an editorial about Obamacare.
Why not?
And there was one little phrase, which I'll read, that set this whole firestorm off. So – the sentence says, simply put, this objection to the president's health care law is based on a falsehood, and letters that have an untrue basis, for example, ones that say there's no sign that humans have caused climate change, do not get printed. So he's saying if they have an untrue basis, letters don't get printed. This was, you know, like one phrase in an entire editorial.
Mm-hmm.
No attention was given to the editorial, but that phrase, you know, just like set the conservative media on fire, saying that the LA Times is endorsing censorship and all these kinds of things. So, so Paul Thornton, who's the Times letters editor, responded to this a few days later, and he said that he had written it as an introduction to another piece by somebody else, and he stood by it. He said, as for letters on climate change, we do get plenty of those from people who deny global warming. And to say they deny it might be an understatement. Many say climate change is a hoax, a scheme by liberals to curtail personal freedom. And he says, you know, I'm not a science expert, but I'm looking at the scientific evidence. And he actually referenced, I feel like a broken record saying this, the IPCC's fifth assessment on climate change. And he concluded by saying, quote, there's no sign humans have caused climate change, end quote, is not stating an opinion. It's asserting a factual inaccuracy. And that's why they won't print these letters.
So it's factual inaccuracies. Mm-hmm. Like say, if someone were to say smoking does not cause cancer. There's no proof that smoking caused cancer.
Right. There's no proof.
Factual inaccuracy.
Right.
It's gone. There's no proof that. So if I write a letter to the LA Times now that says climate change, there's no proof that climate change is occurring.
Right.
That's not going to get printed.
Right. Exactly. Because they say it is a factual inaccuracy. So if, you know, I would imagine one of that half of 1% of climate scientists that questions whether climate change is coming from humans, if they were to write a well-informed letter with data and, you know, facts to back up their story, I imagine that the LA Times would print that. So they're not saying that they won't print anything by climate skeptics, which is kind of how it's getting portrayed in the press.
Sure.
But it hinges on the factual inaccuracy, which is the way that editorial stuff has always worked.
So. Right. So they're probably one of the first papers in the country, or at least the largest paper.
Right.
To do that. So we'll see how that experiment unfolds.
Yeah.
And again, if other papers
the environmental groups
policy,
are lauding this and asking other papers to do the same. And then, you know, like like Fox is saying, you know, LA Times endorses censorship with ban on letters from climate skeptics. So mixed press, but really interesting statement that they, I don't think they expected to make. They kind of were forced into making this.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Don't read the LA Times. If you don't like what their positions are, don't read the LA Times for the same reason many people don't follow Fox News.
That's right.
If you don't like them, don't follow them. That's just one paper out there. Okay. But an interesting – okay. So, all right. That's our news item.
CNG. Let's cover our local natural gas options while we have a minute. The CNG stakeholders group in Summit County is hosting a ride and drive event on Monday, October 28th. And this is more for businesses or shuttle services that are going up and down the canyon all the time, or somebody that has a fleet, or, you know, it's not designed for people just considering maybe buying one CNG car. Mm-hmm. But, you know, businesses and other groups like that can definitely attend. It's Monday, October 28th from 1 to 3 p.m. at the Kimball Junction Branch Library, the Richens Building. The Q&A will take place downstairs in the room next to the Department of Motor Vehicles. And then they'll have vehicles staged in the parking lot for test drives. They'll have a 2011 Chevy Silverado half-ton four-door and a 2011 Ford F-150 four-door. Hmm. And they'll also have a representative from Aries Transportation Technology to answer questions about types of vehicles that can be converted and the cost of conversion and those kinds of things. If you'd like to go, RSVP to Lisa Yoder at Summit County. Mm-hmm. So that's lyoder@summitcounty.org. She's a sustainability coordinator at the county.
Great.
And she said, just to, you know, while we're talking about CNG, there is a new public CNG refueling station under construction at the Bell's Sinclair here in town at the intersection of 80 and 40 to serve all of Park City and Summit County, including the 7 CNG trash haulers that pick up the garbage throughout the county. But that'll be available for public use, and they hope that it'll be operational by the end of 2013, so a few months out.
Fantastic.
And it's great news. And Kim Hugie at CNG America is the developer of this. And their email is available to the public if people have questions.
All right. If we have time, we'll announce it again.
That's right.
At the end of the show. But that's really good news to hear.
Good news for air quality in Summit County.
Absolutely.
So,
yeah. Another step.
So much good news this morning. It's rare we get to talk about that, right?
What happened? What happened to our show?
I don't know.
Where is our show gone? Well, more good news. We're going to be talking to Dr. Jeff Masters in the second half of the show, coming up after these breaks. He's the co-founder of, among other things, Weather Underground. It's a weather site. They're called wonderground.com. We'll ask him about that, too. It's This Green Earth, and stay tuned for that and more. We'll be back after these words from our underwriters.
Hi, this is Gordon Raymond at Republic Services, a proud sponsor of KPCW. Gray is for garbage. Those four words will help you remember the current waste and recycling program. Your blue or brown bin is for recyclables. Gray is for garbage. AlliedWasteUtah.com/Summit County. Hi, this is Gordon Raymond at Republic.
I'm John Wells.
And I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
Join us for Cool Science Radio Thursdays at 9 a.m.
From the discovery of new dinosaurs to the science of an avalanche.
From the secret technology behind Facebook to nanotechnology.
Deciphering science and tech in an entertaining, amusing, and accessible way.
It's Cool Science Radio. If we understand it, so can you.
Thursdays at 9 a.m. only in Park City, only on KPCW. Brought to you by 350 Main and the Spur Bar and Grill.
Welcome back to This Green Earth, a weekly talk show on environmental issues, topics, and concerns I'm Chris Cherniak.
I'm Noah Larson.
Yes, that's right. I'm filling around with the phones to get our next guest on. He is Dr. Jeff Masters, among other things. He is the he's a meteorologist and co-founder of the Weather Underground or wonderground.com. And he joins us this morning to talk about, well, all things weather and climate related. Dr. Masters, are you there?
I am. Good morning. Oh,
perfect. Thanks for joining Nell and me on This Green Earth. Nell, well, I'll let Nell start the first question.
Yeah,
we're both curious about this.
We're both curious about this. We have to ask, where did the name for your site come from? Why Weather Underground?
Yeah, it started as an educational project at the University of Michigan. And back in the late 60s, there was a radical group that also got its start at the University of Michigan called the Weather Underground. They were the radical wing of the Students for a Democratic Society. And my PhD advisor, who was in charge of the little educational project we had, thought it would be a cute tongue-in-cheek reference to the radical group, since it also got its start at U of M, to name our little educational project that. So we did, and back in 1995, when the commercial internet came around and we decided to spin it off into a business, we kept the name, perhaps unwisely, I don't know.
Right, because I figured you were going to get some pushback or at least some misinterpretation of what your site was all about.
Yeah, it's funny when we get our little Google alerts for news stories. Whenever there's a news story about the old radical group, you know, we get all these hits for, you know, oh, it's the Weather Underground in the news.
Yeah, what are you guys branching into anyway? So now,
yeah, right.
but your website is actually wonderground.com.
That's right, yeah, okay. wunderground.com. And we get about 18 million unique users a month. So it's the second largest commercial internet website out there for weather.
Oh, it's a fantastic site. I'm there every day, several times a day, to learn not just about, not even just local weather per se, but national, international weather, your blogging, and incredible graphics. And you got to go there and see these incredible imageries, satellite imageries, et cetera. So we'll get to that in a little bit. What I wanted to do is get your general opinions, thoughts about the IPCC's fifth assessment report. Nell and I talked about it a couple weeks ago when it first came out. What's your takeaway with respect to the summary of this report?
It just strengthens what we already knew. We know that the climate is changing significantly. We know that humans are mostly responsible, that scientists are in very widespread agreement about this. The impacts are already here. They're going to get much worse, and there are things we can do to limit the impacts in the future. And I might add that the report isn't communicated very well. The IPCC report is just kind of a complicated, difficult to dig into sort of set of facts that they really should have spent more effort communicating. I mean, it doesn't say in the report that, oh, we've increased our sea level rise estimates by 60% over the last report. That's a very important fact and something you really have to dig into in a deep way to figure out. So it isn't communicated for people. People have to do their own digging to figure it out, and it turns out that the people with the biggest budgets to do that are the fossil fuel companies. So they put their own spin on that report, and we're hearing a lot of what they've said.
Sure. We agree. Nell and I tried just to go through the 30-page, quote-unquote, policy summary report.
Right.
And that takes a lot of
time.
That's
still a little bit of a slog.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, it's an ongoing challenge of the scientific community to be good communicators to the lay community and to the media. I mean, do you see that time and again?
Yeah, it's a huge problem because scientists aren't trained to be communicators. They're trained to be scientists.
Yeah.
And in the past, that was good enough. You could just sit in your little cubicle and crunch data and, you know, be happy as a clam. But the science that climate scientists are doing now is critical for the future of civilization. And we really need them to be good communicators. And they're starting to realize that at the annual conference that I go to each year in San Francisco, which brings together all the top climate scientists in the world. They've got a lot of seminars now and talks on communication, you know, how to get the word out, how to be a better spokesperson for the science. So we are starting to come around as far as communicating better, but I hope it's not too late.
Well, one interesting thing that I think scientists can do a better job in communicating is in the area of pH changes in the oceans. Oceans are becoming more acidic. We get that, you know, kind of qualitative message. But when you think about pH, it's a complicated chemical process, and the units are logarithmic. So when somebody says, a scientist says, pH is going to drop from 8.0 to 7.8, that doesn't resonate as much with people as if you were to say, you know what, the acidity of the oceans are going to increase 50 to 55% over some time period. That's where I think scientists can do a better job of communicating some of these really important issues that otherwise just doesn't grasp, you know, the layperson doesn't grasp as well.
Yeah, you're right. They did say in the IPCC report that the acidity has increased 26% since pre-industrial times. So that was one good piece of information. But what they didn't say, which was said by a separate paper that came out this year, is that we are now outside the historical limits of how the pH has varied over the last 200 years. The most extreme variation, you know, hasn't been as extreme as we're experiencing right now. So we're in uncharted territory.
Right.
So one of the things, speaking of communication, that Weather Underground does well is communicate and explain some of the complicated things that are going on out there. But before we dig in too deeply to this, explain what exists on wunderground.com. What are the different aspects and blogs that you have on there that people can access?
We have the basics of what people want, which is just a weather forecast for any place in the globe. You can either pick a National Weather Service forecast or our own custom forecast that we generate using a variety of computer model techniques. And then on top of that, we're not just a source of weather information. You can contribute as well. We're a community. And anybody can start their own blog. I run the most popular blog on the site, one that is probably the most popular weather blog on the entire Internet. But you can contribute not only your blogs, but you can contribute your photos. We have 500 weather photos that people upload each day, over 2 million online now since we started doing this a few years ago. And we've got over 20,000 people with backyard weather stations that provide their weather data to us. So a lot of ways people can get involved and be a part of a whole community that shares weather information and talks about the weather.
Your expertise is in the area of tropical storms, might I say?
Yeah, I used to fly with the Hurricane Hunters for 4 years back in the 1980s. I flew into a couple of Category 5 storms, almost got killed flying in Hurricane Hugo.
Yeah.
Decided to leave that job and go get a PhD, and I specialized in air pollution meteorology and did some modeling. So I know a fair bit about climate change as well due to my PhD work.
Okay, well, we want to talk air pollution too, because yesterday you blogged, among other things, about this episode's going on in China right now with air quality. We'll get to that in a second, but you had a chance to fly with the Hurricane Hunters through some very powerful storms. In general, you know, what is that experience like?
We used to say it's 99% boredom and 1% terror, and you know, that's about right some days.
Yeah,
I mean, you're off on these long flights, take 10 or 12 hours out over the ocean, not much to see a lot of times. But I never really got that bored because we had instruments on board that were continuously measuring the weather, and we had long-range radars where you could watch the storms you were approaching. And you carried along with you some of the world's greatest experts on weather and climate. So I got to interact with them, and it was a great laboratory to learn about the weather. I mean, you were there in the midst of the storm with some of the world's greatest experts telling you what was going on. So absolutely fascinating experience to be there learning about the weather, you know, all across the planet. And I thought it was a dream job for a meteorologist. But that being said, when you hit the extreme turbulence of the eye wall of a hurricane, it was a bit touch and go sometimes. I mean, one flight a year on average, we got into a little bit of trouble. And The worst flight I had was into Hurricane Hugo, which was a Category 5 storm. We had an engine catch on fire in the eye wall, and the pilot lost control of the aircraft. And fortunately, we were right at the edge of the calm eye, and we kind of coasted into the eye, and he was able to pull us out about 900 feet above the water and extinguish the fire in the engine.
What? Say that? 900 feet above the water. That's...
Yeah, it was a bit close looking, those big waves down there, you know, 50-foot high waves right there, seeming like they could, you know, send water right up on top of our aircraft.
Holy smokes. And I'm going to assume that that may have been one of your last flights?
That was my last flight, that was absolutely. It. I got down and said, I'm all done, and that was that. I've never been on the Hurricane Hunter flight since.
You know what, Jeff, that was your tipping point. tipping point.
Yeah, there are things that, you know, are life-changing, and certainly for me, that flight was a pivotal point in my life.
A great motivator to go get your PhD.
Absolutely.
So you went on and got your PhD. Why did you get involved in weather? Was this something that you enjoyed as a kid?
Yeah, I mean, growing up, I was always interested in physical science. I had a backyard telescope. I was a rock hound. And I had my own backyard weather station. So I knew I'd do some kind of earth science. I didn't know what kind until I actually got into college. I thought it might be geology, but I said, hey, you know, geology moves too slow. I mean, you got to wait millions of years for your theories to be proved. So I'll go into meteorology. You know, it changes really quick. It's interesting. And you don't have to wait so long to see what's going on.
And there's so much to learn. It's so dynamic. If you just joined us, we're talking with Dr. Jeff Masters. He's a meteorologist and co-founder, among other things, Weather Underground at wonderground.com. And we're talking about all things climate and weather. And if you've got any questions, you can submit them to our Facebook page.
That's right. You can submit them on KPCW This Green Earth, and we'll ask our guest.
Okay.
So Jeff, you mentioned that you studied air pollution meteorology. How is air pollution meteorology different than normal meteorology? How do you forecast pollution?
You not only have to know the weather, you have to know where you're located as far as, you know, what altitude, how strong the sun is, and what the chemical reactions are that are occurring, and what are the emissions of pollutants that are going to combine into the air to give you a potentially hazardous situation. And you have to run very large, complex computer models that are very difficult to get together. It's quite a challenge because you have so many diverse things you got to bring together.
Yeah, and if there's one great place to study, it has to be China right now. Let's talk a little bit about that. The air pollution episodes going on there. One city in particular right now is the focus. I believe it's pronounced Harbin, China, in the northeast part of the country. The air quality there is off the charts. And when I say off the charts, I believe they've maxed out some of their air monitoring equipment, reaching 1,000 micrograms per liter or a cubic 1,000 micrograms per cubic meter in PM 2.5. I mean, are you astounded at some of the numbers that you're seeing in this country?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't want to live there, much less visit there. I mean, I've been invited to go to Beijing, and I've decided I'm not going to go there just because if you can't breathe the air, why would you want to go there? The life expectancy in some of those northern Chinese cities is more than 5 years less than some of the surrounding areas just because the pollution's so bad. Right. So a very dangerous place to live, and like you said, off the charts. They can't even measure the levels of pollution there that they're getting.
Can you give us a comparison of the levels that they're getting versus the levels that we get in some of our, you know, polluted cities, say Salt Lake, you know, here in the U.S.?
Yeah, yesterday's levels were about 40 times as high as the international standard for fine particles in the atmosphere, and probably about 10 times as high as the worst levels that we get in the U.S. Utah had some very bad pollution last year in some of their valleys in the winter. You had very cold weather there, and that trapped in the pollutants in a really dangerous fashion. But the Chinese levels are about 10 times higher than that, so way, way on the bad scale.
Right. I mean, here, the Salt Lake City panics when we get to 100 micrograms per cubic meter of PM 2.5, and that's bad. that's bad, and it's visibly bad. I can't even get my head around what 10 times. Well, you
a
know what?
Thousand micrograms.
You can
per
go to
cubic meter.
Obviously, there are photos out, and Jeff, you have some photos posted on your website showing that visibility was reduced to something like less than 100 yards. I mean, it's like a thick, thick fog.
Yeah, it was even dangerous to drive. They had to close some of the roads. I mean, if you can't see, you know, the end of your hood, you're not going to be very safe driving out there.
And the airports are closed, of course, et cetera. And it continues today. You have a website that you link to called AQICN.org, and I want our listeners to visit that website because it looks like it tracks air quality across China and some of the other Asian countries on a real time basis. Do you know what the source of that website is?
No, I just discovered it for the first time yesterday. It's one of those great things about my blog is people post comments in there all the time with the links to interesting, you know, internet websites with information, and somebody posted that, and I said, wow, you know, that's cool. I've never seen that one before. So it shows, not only for Harbin, where we were watching, but Beijing was at about 400 micrograms per cubic meter yesterday. Some really incredible levels of pollution all across the country.
I mean, I'll say it again. It's www.aqicn.org. Visit that website and be astounded at the air quality, not just in the northeast part of China, but across that country. It's amazing. So, but those are the kind of things that you can learn on wonderground.com, Dr. Jeff Masters' site. You know, Jeff, I wanted to go back to the Fifth Assessment report because in that report, and you blog about this, there's apparently what we call a hiatus, or you call a speed bump going on with respect to the overall increase in global air temperatures. Can you talk a little bit about that and why that is occurring?
Yeah, what we're talking about here is the global surface temperature measured over the last 10 or 15 years. And this is something that has been in the news a lot, and it's what I alluded to earlier. It's the framing of the IPCC report that's been put forth by the fossil fuel companies. It turns out that if you start in 1998 and measure the global surface temperature since then, it really hasn't increased very much. It still has increased, but maybe a factor of four or so less than in the 1990s. So, yeah, there's been a slowdown if you use that particular period of averaging. But it's interesting, if you use 2006 as your endpoint instead, you come up with a 15-year average of global surface air temperature that increased almost double what it was,
right,
you know, in the previous period. So it's very sensitive to where you pick your beginning and endpoint. If you happen to pick your beginning point near a record warm year like 1998 was, then you can show that things haven't warmed up as much maybe as if you picked almost virtually any other start point. So it's a bit of a cherry-picking exercise, we like to call it. You can kind of manipulate the statistics to get the answer that looks best for your cause.
Right.
But we have to keep in mind that climate is defined on a period of 30 years, and if you look at 10 or 15 years, you can potentially find periods where there's a slowdown. And we expect to see that because there are these oscillations in the Earth atmosphere system and the oceans as well, where you tend to get a lot of heat stored in the oceans. Over 92% of all the heat from global warming goes into the oceans. And if that fluctuates just a few percent due to these cycles we call El Nino and La Nina, then you can put a lot more heat down there than goes into the atmosphere. Eventually, that heat will get released back to the atmosphere. I mean, we've gone almost 10 years since our last major El Nino episode, where you tend to see a strong heating of the atmosphere due to heat being released from the oceans. So that's eventually going to happen again, and we're going to see a reversal of this pattern of reduced surface warming.
Right. So, I mean, the takeaway is maybe we're not increasing at the levels that's very linear in nature, and the things don't increase linearly in effect, but 9 or the 10 out of the 10 warmest years ever recorded have occurred in the past 10 or 13 years. So we are warm and we remain warm. I kind of attribute to like standing on top of a mesa and walking from one end of the mesa to the other. You don't increase much in elevation, but you're at the top of the mesa and you're at the highest point surrounding yourselves. And so, you know, it's kind of in that sense. But like you say, this is what the fossil fuel companies have kind of put their spin on some of this the report.
So,
despite the fact we are in this slowdown, the Arctic hit its all-time low in ice extent last year, and the oceans continue to build up very acidic levels that are harmful to sea life. So the impacts are already here, even though it's been a little bit slower, thank goodness. The impacts are still quite severe, and they're going to continue to get more severe.
So, Jeff, we got a question from a listener, and of course, our community is always very focused on snow. But the question is, how is climate change affecting global snow cover?
It's affecting global snow cover as far as the length of the season where we get snow is reduced. Particularly in the spring, we're seeing record low levels of snow cover in May and June. I think we had the second lowest or first lowest this year for those 2 months. During the rest of the year, we haven't seen that much of a change as far as the depth of the snow or the coverage. We're still getting quite strong snowstorms during the deep part of winter. I mean, it's cold enough to snow, so by gosh, the snow still happened, thank goodness. Mm. But it's when you get to the boundaries of the season where you start to feel the fact that the globe is warming, and the May and June snow cover is definitely a big concern, because when you start getting less snow during those months, now you're having spring occur earlier, and you're reducing your snowpack and reducing your water availability during the year as well. And that's a big problem in the Mountain West, I know.
Yeah, and in fact, we're kind of in a high-pressure, we have a big high-pressure system built up that's going to hang around through this week. Our temperatures here in Park City are kind of average, upper 50s, but down in Salt Lake City, they're about 5 to 6 degrees warmer than normal. And more importantly, there's no precipitation expected, and we're way below our precipitation, average precipitation for this month. And so, like you're saying, it's the fringes. It's the fall and it's the spring where we're going to see possibly higher snow elevations. The rain snow elevation will be increased, and we'll have to learn to adapt to that. So,
yeah, I mean, a lot more of your precipitation is going to fall as rain than as snow, so you're not going to have that snowpack in the summer to kind of give you nice water flows during the summer to help out with the water availability issues. And that's going to be costly to adjust
yes.
to that.
Yes.
Well, Jeff, we have only a couple of minutes left. So before we wrap up, will you just give us your website one more time and where people can read more about these topics?
Sure. The website is wunderground.com, Wonderground, or weatherunderground.com works as well. Mm-hmm. And I write a blog there. It's featured on the main page. Today I talked about fires in Australia, tropical storms in the Atlantic, hurricane in the Pacific, typhoon near Japan. I cover whatever breaking weather events there are, and if there aren't any, I'll just, by gosh, talk about climate change, because that's something we all need to be concerned about.
Sure.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for joining us on today's show. We're talking with Dr. Jeff Masters, the co-founder of the Weather Underground website. Thanks again for joining us.
All right. You're welcome. It was a pleasure.
All right. Let's take a break for some underwriters, and we'll be back. It's This Green Earth.
Donations to Park City's ReStore reduce landfill costs for residents and builders and prevents tons of material from entering the waste stream each year. And proceeds from resale of your donated items help fund Habitat for Humanity affordable housing programs in Summit and Wasatch counties. ReStore is open Wednesday through Saturday, 10 to 6, and is located in Silver Summit at 6280 Silver Creek Drive. Habitat for Humanity of Summit and Wasatch counties is a nonprofit organization.
The ABC4 Weather Report comes to you live Monday through Friday at 8 a.m. after the NPR News. Brought to you by Albion Financial Group.
Oh. Welcome back to This Green Earth, weekly talk show on environmental issues and concepts of sustainability. Chris Cherniak, she's Nell Larson. Got a couple more items to cover before
That's
we start
right.
to wrap up.
It's another show has flown by, but I wanted to, in light of talking with Jeff Masters about Weather Underground and some of these bigger issues, I wanted to bring up a local weather blog called Wasatch Weather Weenies that I really love.
Really?
Wasatch Weather Weenies. Yeah,
okay.
You can Google it. And it's run by, and the blogs are by, you know, professors and, you know, some knowledgeable people on the weather. And he talks about a couple of the recent topics. One of them has been about this, as he says, this ginormous ridge, this ginormous high pressure ridge that's set up. And he gives the detail on that. And another one is about why we're starting to see a little bit of smoggy haze in the Salt Lake Valley, even though the inversion that we think of in the winter hasn't quite set up. So some interesting local topics there on weather.
And what is it? The name again?
Wasatch Weather Weenies.
.com?
Just Google Wasatch Weather Weenies.
Yeah, I'm sure you'll find. Okay,
we'll
Wasatch
post it. Yeah, exactly.
That's great.
It's not, the name is not easily confused with other groups.
Exactly. Hey, you like our show, yeah, but don't forget to tune in to The Mountain Life tomorrow at 9 a.m. Tim and Lynn will talk with Susan Odell about the Eats program in the local schools about how healthy food can make it into the schools. Then they speak with Dr. Robin Chutkan. She is the author of the widely acclaimed book, Gut Bliss, a 10-day plan to ban bloat, flush toxins, and dump your digestive baggage the healthy way. Okay. She's also a regular on the Dr. Oz show, so you don't want to miss that. And not just that, they have three guests. The third guest is local landscape architect Alex Stoy of Mountain Miners Landscaping. Alex has taken water conservation in landscaping to a new level. That's with Tim and Lynn.
That's
on
all
the Mountain
tomorrow.
Life tomorrow at 9 a.m. Great public affairs shows that we offer here on KPCW. Let's take one more break for some underwriters, and we'll be back to wrap up. It's This Green Earth.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided by Longreimer Weiniger Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, LRW-LAW.com. Park City Nursery. For 30 years, we know what grows. ParkCityNursery.com. VaultHomeLoans.com. Purchase and refinance mortgages. Conventional FHA and VA, 801-201-3484. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and listeners like you.
You're listening to This Green Earth, and we're about to wrap up today's show. First, we'd like to thank our guest, Dr. Jeff Masters, founder of the Weather Underground, one of our very favorite weather sites. An amazing place.
Yes.
We'd also like to thank our underwriters
for
the show, as always.
They include Jones, Waldo, Holbrook, and McDonough.
Republic Services.
Habitat for Humanities Restore.
Rocky Mountain Power.
San Francisco Design.
And, of course, Prudential Utah Real Estate.
And you can join us on Facebook. Like us. Post your comments at KPCW This Green Earth.
You can also email us your thoughts about the shows, your suggestions for upcoming shows, or your comments on what you heard to This Green Earth Radio at KPC. Oh, This Green Earth at KPCW.org.
Perfect.
That's right.
Again,
new
thanks,
email address.
Right. Thanks for joining us. And we'll be here next week, every Tuesday at 9 a.m. Join us on This Green Earth. And remember, this is KPCW Park City. NPR News is coming up.